Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Masonic Effects, just an opportunity to do more with the Masonic topic than feel like you've been hit with another soundbite. This is a place where we hope to think through just a little bit and pull out of the randomness of information that seems to constantly swirl around us. An opportunity to focus a little bit on some remarkably interwoven themes, as we would tend to find in Freemasonry. Program today, it's interesting. Music, without question, is just phenomenal. Good music. The narrative, Mystery Beneath Our Feet, I think it will appeal to the your sensibility, and the poetry of William Wordsworth. Well, you know, at this time of year, here in where I am in Canada, I'm facing the change of season, just as everybody is. Only it's quite marked here. We're moving from leaving summer behind and well into autumn, and we're looking at winter. Snow is falling in different parts of the country, although. You know, across 5,000-6,000 kilometers of countryside, that's not unusual. Over in the mountains and out in the plains in the west, we're seeing some of that action right now. But where I am, more in the central portion in Upper Canada, the onset of winter is something that's anticipated with some openness and agreeability by people here. It might be that we can't change it, so we might as well make the best of it. But it's also a time when the nights are longer, and nights give us an opportunity to sit around a fire with a good book in hand and think through and ponder, look into the darkness and think about meaning and about opportunity and the importance of life around us. And here we generally, although it's often been said, respect the fact that we live in a privileged situation and do that without ever losing track of the fact that it is privileged. And there are a lot of people that struggle far more than us. And so if we can share some of what we have help to rebuild those areas or to initiate a new conversation, new decision-making that leads to more satisfying nationhood, then I think we have a role to play. But as you know, this is Masonic Effects, and we're more about the original networking. I think we certainly rely on our history to reinforce the messages of networking. Although as Masonry crossed the ocean many years ago, we tended to make assumptions. It tended to make assumptions that have proven difficult to fulfill. The landmarks, the constant reminders, that exist in Europe in older cultures, it don't happen here. They happen through literature, through history, and we've lived in such an incredible time where history has become more refined, more accurate, and it's changed. So we're not just looking at the history of victors of battle, but we're looking at the context. We're looking at the life of people before us, the evolution of ideas, the evolution of lifestyle. And that didn't necessarily come. It leaves us in a way, you know, like all generations of people that leave somewhere to come a far and distant land, their notion of what they left is fixed on the date when they did leave. For whatever reason, they left. But in those places left behind, life continues. Life always continues. It goes on. It evolves. It changes. The small shrub becomes the great tree. The roads become potholed and worn, or they become rebuilt, and the rivers become tamed, or they become a source of erosion. People that have ability and a need for change make that happen. So while we have this true sense of nostalgia for what was, it doesn't necessarily repeat itself in what we left behind. That's the beauty, I guess. Here we're going to settle into some let me catch my breath and enjoy a bit of Cannonball Adderley here to collect our thoughts. And we'll move on with a decent show today. Thank you very, very much for your participation and your patience. We've had technical problems, not of our making, I might say, but the solutions are taxing our range. Here, Autumn Leaves. Thank you. Can you imagine? Cannonball Adderley. The sidemen in that session, Miles Davis, Hank Jones, Sam Jones, and Art Blakey. Can you imagine? It was about a year before Blakey and Davis and Adderley sat down and did Kind of Blue. It's remarkable that we expect each and every encounter that we have with one another to be a learning experience. I think that's a reasonable expectation in some ways, but not ever as a forced obligation. No. This is about a presence of mind, and it's not expecting that everybody is going to be iRobot, that the little switch is going to be turned on for you when you come near a lodge. If you feel that pushback, for what it's worth, you can examine the reasons. There is always reason for it, isn't there? Yeah. And more often than not, I think you'll find that it has more to do with what's going on inside of the individual than it does with the lodge. Lodge is what it is. It's a version of an application of some ideals. Well, you know, in the light of day, we realize that idealism isn't what we live. It's what we strive to attain. What we live is a version of how we're going to conduct ourselves with the ideals in mind. The good man handles himself with some dignity. Well, that simply breaks down to good manners. That's something you can teach yourself. Some of us have the advantage of being taught that in our finishing school or the way we were brought up, but not necessarily the majority of us. Not to say that how we were raised as little boys and little girls was absolute or correct, but far from it. One of the dirty little secrets of life that we know is that not every child has a wonderful life, and not every family is the sanctity, a place of safety. However, we prevail. We prevail. Some more damaged than others, unfortunately, but we prevail. And when we look around and assume that in our current state, we want to demonstrate to ourselves and to the world around us our capabilities, then teaching ourselves manners is a good start. It's a way of being able to address unexpected social encounters, to be able to remove the awkwardness. Now, repeat that year in and year out for 5 or 10 years. It can be more than a strain. It's like the drop of water on the stone. Then the presence of mind will be bringing you to a point of problem solving, trying to sort this out. What can you control and what can't you control? And what can you do to preserve your own learning opportunity? Well, today we have at our fingertips the libraries of the world. I never thought for a moment that we could learn about something as complex as Freemasonry by studying opinions written by Masons about Masons. I always presumed that there were larger, more universal concepts at play, and that Masonry is a derivative of those concepts, that evolution. Like we find ourselves focused on the outcome of the Enlightenment, don't we? And normally we would want to ask ourselves about what that has to do with Renaissance and the general movement of idea from superstition, from control by the estates, to reason. And is it any easier? Well, what's easy? What's meant to be easy in life? Easier to have somebody explaining science to us based on some fabricated notions, some magical thinking? Is that easier to be duped? I don't think. Fool to me for sitting there after being able to realize certain things seem hard to believe, that we start to examine faith and belief. And you often in my generation, it was with this pious thrust, this fire and brimstone, acceptance or punishment, not deliberation, not debate, not question, but acceptance or punishment, the wrath. Today, we sit with one another so much more sophisticated in our thinking, but nevertheless wrestling with ideas about faith and application and this whole idea, this upstart idea that Masonry brought to the conversation of this great architect of the universe that really, really clipped the wings of the big war hawks out there, didn't it? We weren't aligning with any of it. How audacious, how could we dare do something like that? And then to come up with something as simple to understand and yet harder to connect, this concept of the universe and purposefulness. Well, then it draws us into whether we have a calculus and a physics that's describing something or creating something. You know, when you ask the question, then you begin to create. Well, all of that, we park that. That's for us to reason out when we're together, when we have become intimate contacts, where we can have the company of thoughtful men, of listening to philosophers and mathematicians, where we can be in the audience and be absorbing and evaluating and then trying to make up a reasonable effort at a given point. Today, this is what I feel. Is it certain? Well, the more certain I am, the more I know that there will be questions, always, always questions. And they take us further. That certainty, the certainty is there's always doubt. Masonry beneath our feet. Here. Speculative Freemasonry is, if nothing, an anecdote to present-day cynicism for a small group within the wider body of Masonry. Once we remove extremism and zealotry, it provides followers with a calculus. Unfamiliar to moderns, I would say, a sustainable spirituality, a prompt to discover within yourself enough happiness to attempt moral and ethical trials, and enough to examine how to live with gravitas. In privileged communities, we vacillate between too much and too little. The world has not knelt down to us to let us indulge ourselves in male entitlement. Masonry, at the core, tears away at smugness and superiority over the remnants of diminished religious and political control and tribalism. Not so simple. It asks, through ritual, for an acolyte to commit. And therein, we come face to face with an overinflated sense of our capabilities. I'm committing to what? Rising to the tests of good life exacts a toll. It alters what and who we are in a very real sense. Unless we are knowledgeable and comfortable with humanist views, it is a daunting prospect to live out life as a Mason. Every aspect requires exchange of perspectives to galvanize learning. Coming to terms with the indulgent class structure should make any person doubt the merit of it all. Speculative Freemasonry. It takes us to the edge of knowing and being. Skeptic, Stoic, or Epicurean alike. But to examine and then question the orthodoxy of faith, that's rare character. That is a warning to thinkers. It's like truth to power. Distraction and denial is functional, but leaves us incomplete. And so we have an answer, part of a process, no shortcut. No leaning on the work of others before us. This is the journey that we take alone, each one of us. That experience within the experience. Yeah. Thank you. it's an interesting parallel, I think, listening to jazz, the riffing, the creativity. If you've ever want a treat and you're a good, you like jazz, you might want to follow up on some classically trained musicians who do similar feats with the classical music. That spontaneity, quite remarkable. Remember, here this portion of the program looks at, introduces some poetry, not just for no reason, but it's my effort to persuade you that in that ongoing, that constant debate between the poets and the philosophers about which carries forward the truth, that one that needs to go to the death, I believe that there are truths within poetry, within that the poets are giving to us, not that we find them easy to understand. But what part of the masonry would be easily understood when you think that this is an effort to make something coherent out of a world of chaos? As we look at arm's length toward the communities around us, it often seems chaotic. We see distortions. We see manipulation of history. We see truth and opinion being mixed. Not if here that a martial law or a military type of training brings order, not the kind of order that Masonry is talking about. We can get everybody to dress up the same and speak the same and march the same. That utopian hell that Thomas More was writing to us and trying to warn us about. But order in terms of thought. And I like to think it had much more to do with teaching us to reason. And once we have those tools, we don't no longer need somebody else whispering in our ear to tell us the solution or the answer or the path out of the confusion around us, because we understand, we have a sense of ethics, and we're able to calculate the difference between the accurate path, the right and the wrong. My indulgence again is more than enjoyable. This is the work of William Wordsworth. I was fortunate, like many, to be introduced to Wordsworth during lectures in university many years ago. But funny enough, they never left. And so I find myself recalling and reciting and understanding some of these classes that I, at the time, just one of how many that you go through in a day or the week. This is a fellow, though, you close your eyes. If you've seen the Lake District in northern England, some days it's just idyllic. You know, it's so beautiful and contoured and it draws you in. The colors, the plants, the trees, it's very soothing. And this is where he was born. Now, today, of course, a lot of people before me and me included tend to romanticize these environments. And perhaps that is an influence on the work of this man, both in how it was generated and how it's viewed. He grew up, as he said, fostered alike by beauty and by fear. a sensitive boy. He was well educated, but he had to return to England and was cut off from his family, married a French woman, Annette Velo, And he didn't see his little girl, Caroline, until she was 9 years old. Anyway, he had his challenges too. The poem I'm going to share with you today is London, 1802. This is a call to Milton, John Milton, who was dead at the time, of course, from the speaker who's saying, you know, you should be alive here. Look at this. Look at the selfishness and the stagnation that's occurring around us. If only you were here to give us manners and virtue and freedom and power. When you read Milton's work, these are prevalent themes. So saying, where are you? You know, we need somebody like you to help sort out this mess. We could use it. Perhaps we could do the same right now. Milton, where are you? You know, you got away easy. Could you not realize that we would need you and your influence? And how he put this into a sonnet, 14-line little invention. Do you remember? Iambic pentameter, yeah, all of that. How? Listen to for yourself and find, as you listen, what truths do you feel, do you experience coming from Wordsworth? Listen to the form and listen to the emphasis. What was he getting at? It's one of the most excellent sonnets that Wordsworth wrote in the early 1800s. Milton, thou shouldst be living at this hour. England hath need of thee. She is a fen of stagnant waters, altar, sword, and pen, fireside, the heroic wealth of hall and bower, have forfeited their ancient English dower of inward happiness. We are selfish men. Oh, raise us up, return to us again, and give us manners, virtue, freedom, power. Thy soul was like a star and dwelt apart. Thou hadst a voice whose sound was like the sea, pure as the naked heavens, majestic, free. So didst thou travel on life's common way in cheerful godliness, and yet thy heart the loneliest duties on herself did lay. It's like saying, hey, you helped us understand. We could use that help again. Thank you. sometimes, even in the midst of a storm, if you've ever been out on your boat, you'll know that the sun will break through the chaos and just for a moment, it's like there's a containment. This too will end. It'll pass, although it can be terrifying in the meantime. It's like that song, Autumn in New York. It's aged well from 1956 until now. So maybe we can romanticize for a second, sitting in a cafe in New York, listening to George Shearing, enjoying it with our friends, or reading a copy of the paper after a busy day, sipping a glass of something with good company. Although we are taught often and want to encourage the notion that we are as individual as snowflakes, as leaves in a tree, we are nevertheless tied together. There's a link. All this individuality needs, I think, some framework, some scaffolding to keep us in balance. Why, I would put this question to you, why is speculative Freemasonry able to be impactful in the 21st century when it was essentially something that was produced, what would you say, arguably 15th, 16th, 17th, 18th century reached fruition? Yeah, would you say that? And it hasn't been this, it hasn't had a skyrocket effect. Oh, we look back on our history with rose-colored glasses, but we tend to dismiss the individual battles that went on and still go on. The struggle, the difficulty, the weight of trying to come to an understanding of an ethical philosophy of life and then apply it. Well, something resonates, doesn't it? You just heard some music from that was produced in originally that was written back in the 30s as a part of a Broadway play, wasn't it? So does it have an effect today? Well, yes, we could say it does. Does the music maintain its charm? Well, yes. Is it the same as what it was? It's almost ridiculous in a way. Sameness and oneness and singularity or universality. We receive messages in the history, all quite symbolic, like our language. Our language is symbolic. We receive information that is for us with presence of mind to decipher and to then apply. If an idea that we receive is better than one that we hold right now, we'll replace the one that's better. But we don't always do that. Our outcomes are not always rational. That's where the algorithm falls apart. We should, you and me, be predictable. And we are, until one of us makes a mistake, a so-called mistake. One of us makes a decision based on variables and phenomena that weren't taken into account. So as much as we are drawn to the purity of mathematics, there is something that pushes back in a way that is quite compelling about the nature of us, how we apply the learning. And look around. We have chaos. Seemingly, we have chaos. So if if we're all just products of someone's imagination, then there should be this uniformity. And if we want to correct conflict, then just live with oneness. We'll all like the same things. We'll all think the same things. So all of you out there will be like me, and you all be after Nancy, my wife. Far from it, eh? Yeah. We have our own histories and the unique way that we pull together self-image and understanding is known to the privacy of your thoughts and your conscience. Here, Margaret Jacob, interesting historian. I hope she was influenced by the great Canadian historian Margaret Macmillan. I tend to think she must have been. The thrust of Masonic rhetoric was invariably civic. The politics created were intended to possess an internal government as well as to be social and intellectual in character. They were never intended in the first instance to be political, as that term denotes state power, access to or protection from. When we speak of Freemasonry and politics, we are saying that the civil consciousness developed in the lodges perforce addressed the nature and purpose of the polity. In that sense, the lodges were deeply concerned with the political without ever wishing to engage in day-to-day politics. Nevertheless, hostile critics made the point. They saw us as a threat. And then went on to imagine that their insight conformed to reality, that when they were guessing that we were must be some kind of threat because we met in secrecy, they made it a reality by talking about it and then preaching it and saying it out there over and over until it became propagandized, of course, it became believed. Say the same thing, no matter the lie, repeat it, and people will tend to believe it. Weak-minded people. That this separation of Masonic idealism from actual political intervention was bogus. That's part of our history too, that pressure. The separation we now know was never bogus. Masonic records are clear on the lack of specific political involvement on the part of almost any European lodge. The official Masonic constitution published in London in 1723 prohibited any quarrels about religion or nations or state policy. We are resolved against all politics at what never yet conduced to the welfare of the lodge. But we need to know what London Freemasons meant by politics. And then we leap forward to 1720s. In Britain, politics meant something rather different than what it meant for the rest of Europe. In speaking of politics, the Masonic constitutions meant party politics. The rage of party brought on by the creation of a new political nation as a result of the Revolution Settlement of 1688 and 89. Politics was the contest for power between Whig and Tory, between court and country, ever between Jacobite and Hanoverian, within the context of a constitutionally protected system of parliamentary elections for which approximately one-fifth of the male population was enfranchised. One-fifth of the men Britain could vote. So much for unity, huh? Take off the rose-colored glasses for a second. Here's a way. In some ways, I wish and hope that each of you in your own way will be remembered like Bill Evans is remembered. He never considered himself a really bright guy. He thought that he worked very, very hard until his music became subconscious. And then he could just let his subconscious take over. Perhaps that's the sincerity that you hear and I hear when we listen to his music today. I would only hope that each one of you find your similar place where that's the legacy that you leave behind, that you work hard to reveal that unintended, unexpected talent within. Wouldn't that be wonderful if each one of us could wish that for the other? Thank you very much, though, for sitting in with me again and the conversation around Freemasonry mixed with some charming music and some poetry that's meant to twist your mind, to persuade you that there's truth in poetry. Remembering that each one of you is a sincere fan of poetry because you listen to music with lyrics, the songs, the lyrics, the poetry, whether it's a simple refrain repeated over and over again, the hook, as the producers would want to say, or something more elaborate. It's been a pleasure, and I look forward to seeing you again next week. Thank you for your overwhelming support. Thank you, Europe. I'm quite taken by the number of countries represented in our listening audience. Right now it's 19. I'll expect you to commit those acts of random Masonic kindness and do come back. Little West Montgomery. Thank you.